the introduction, Lee, and I would like to thank everybody for coming, and good morning. So as a little bit of an introduction to Dollar Spot, which since we've heard about this a little bit already this morning, it's been a popular topic already, I'll go through this a little quickly. Sclerotinia homeocarpa is the causal agent of Dollar Spot disease on turf grass. This causes circular patches of sunken bleached turf that are about the size of an American silver dollar all the way up to 15 centimeters, depending on the mowing height of the turf. It tends to be a little more severe on shorter mowing heights. Individual grass blades will become chlorotic, and then dieback occurs within a characteristic brown margin. This is also known as the hourglass lesion, which is a very useful diagnostic feature when diagnosing dollar spot disease. As a sign for the pathogen, you can see white cobweb-like mycelia, especially in the canopy during moist conditions, especially in the morning. So why do we care about dollar spot? Why is this so important to us? Effective turf may become severely damaged or allow for encroachment by weeds. The epidemics may affect aesthetic value and sport playing quality of turf grasses. Can you imagine trying to putt over that surface on the bottom? I don't think that would be very good for your game of golf. In North America, dollar spot can occur on all turf grass species, and significant fungicide expenditures are made towards its control. As a matter of fact, most dollar spot fungicide budgets, the majority of it is dedicated to dollar spot control. For us, in our lab, we would like to kind of elucidate the biology and epidemiology of the pathosystem. There are a lot of good control measures out there, but we could improve these if we really understand the basics behind the pathogen and how we could control it based on good science in that regard. There has been some difficulty in obtaining reproductive structures for classification. I'm not even really 100% sure where this should lie based on work in other labs, like F.T. Bennett. He was able to obtain apothecia for the structures or sexual structures of the fungus, but this has been hit or miss in other labs. There is very limited knowledge about the disease cycle. We're not even really 100% sure where this thing comes from, since there's no really asexual spore state that we have been able to see. Experiments focusing on environmental factors have been limited. A lot of them do occur on PDA culture media in the lab, including those done by Endo. He did look at temperature experiments, but he did not do this on live turf or any kind of debris. Also, to further exacerbate the problem of dollar spot, forecasting systems have been developed, but either under or over predicted disease development. So our research objectives are to determine the influence of temperature on Sclerotinia homeocarpa growth on soil and turf grass debris. We would also like to determine the impact of temperature on Sclerotinia homeocarpa aggressiveness toward live creeping bentgrass. And hopefully the information we garnish from these experiments will help us to develop better forecasting systems and really give that hard science that we need to develop better controls. As for our materials and methods, our setup is kind of seen on the right picture there. In different columns, we have our different treatments. So this first column here represents a native silt loam with autoclaved ground turf grass debris applied. The second column here is native silt loam without any turf grass debris. The third is sand, which would represent a putting green situation, with turf grass debris, and also bare sand. All of these pots were saturated to field capacity, and then they were covered with petri plate lids after inoculation with one of four different isolates of Sclerotinia homeocarpa. And we covered them with petri dish lids because we wanted to maintain a condition of 100% relative humidity throughout the study. We also took these pots and incubated them at different temperatures. There were both Wisconsin and Oklahoma isolates of Sclerotinia homeocarpa looked at, and these were done in a randomized complete block fashion. After incubation, we took out the fungi, or the pots from the incubators, and we assessed radial growth of the fungus 24, 48, 72, and 96 hours under a dissecting scope. We did this to ensure that there wasn't any contaminant fungi and the radial growth was actually emanating from the auger plug. As a result, mycelial growth did vary by temperature, soil type, and the presence of absence of turf grass debris. You can see differential growth in these pictures. The pathogen grew really well, had massive amounts of radial growth between, I think it's 20 and 29 degrees Celsius, and had growth at lower temperatures, especially in the presence of debris. But there was almost little to no growth on the bare treatments. It was highly variable and hard to assess what was actually going on here. To look at the radial growth of the Oklahoman isolates of Sclerotinia homeocarpa at different temperatures, you can see here that really the most rapid growth occurred between 20 and 30 degrees Celsius. Growth did occur at 15 degrees Celsius and 35 degrees Celsius, but you have almost a curve occurring where you can see it starts to go up and fall back down in regard to optimal temperature range. In the interest of time, I won't be showing you the Wisconsin data. We had a whole lot more temperatures that we had done, but it was very similar to what you see here on the Oklahoma graph. And there's the other component of our study was the pathogen aggressiveness assay. For our methods, we took containers with calcined clay, seeded them with creeping bentgrass, and established this for 6 weeks. We inoculated by placing 2 5-millimeter auger plugs of PDA cultures from one of 8 isolates of either Oklahoman or Wisconsin Sclerotinia homeocarpa. The inoculated plants were moved to growth chambers at different temperatures, and this was done in a randomized complete block design fashion. Disease severity was visually estimated every 24 hours up to 240 hours past inoculation. We did some statistics on this. Our analysis was done using SAS version 9.2. We calculated area under the curve progress values. These proc mixed, and our mean AUC values, which you'll see in the next graphs, were square root transformed. This graph shows our AUC means at the different temperatures that we looked at. There was a significant difference between 14, 20, and 25, 30, 20, and 25, but there was no significant difference between the 20 and 25 degree treatments and 14 and 30 degree treatments overall. We also looked at the aggressiveness of warm versus cool season isolates. The square root AUC values were a little bit higher for the cool season isolates and a little bit lower for the warm season isolates. So this shows how our disease severity actually looked after coming out of the incubator. This was really exciting for us because in previous literature, they haven't really been able to produce the pitted lesions that you see out in the field with dollar spot. Not only were we able to do this and confirm that these were actual dollar spot symptoms, we also were able to isolate the hourglass lesions as a diagnostic feature from each of these. So this first row here represents 5 different Oklahoma isolates. This is also an Oklahoma isolate as well. And these 3 are Wisconsin isolates. This is a control. And the second 2 rows are just a repetition of the first 2 rows. You can see from this that the Wisconsin isolates were a little more severe than the Oklahoma isolates, and that there was really no blight or occurring in the controls, which was a really good sign for us. To look what's actually happening here, there are the creeping bentgrass square transformed AUC values. On the bottom, you can see it's labeled the Wisconsin isolates versus the Oklahoman isolates. Those isolated from buffalo grass, creeping bent grass, and Bermuda grasses. So we haven't looked into it too much yet, but we think there might be a little bit of our host specificity going on, since we did use isolates that were taken from buffalo grass and Bermuda grass in addition to the creeping bent grass, and all of these were grown on creeping bent grass. That could be explaining why the AUC values are slightly lower for the buffalo grass and Bermuda grass isolates coming out of Oklahoma. As for our discussion, we found that optimal temperature for growth occurs between 17 to 26 degrees Celsius, and that the pathogen is most aggressive between 20 and 25 degrees Celsius. Growth is possible as low as 11 degrees Celsius, and as high as 35, but it is really much slower. Dollar spot can develop at 14 and 30 degrees, but it's really less severe than compared to those grown at 20 and 25 degrees Celsius. And growth on soil with debris was similar to growth on the PDA media experiments done by Endo, but however, it was really minimal and variable on bare soil and sand. We also saw an interesting thing occurring with the bare soil and sand treatments. Rather than having actual radial growth, the fungi sent out almost like an exploratory little arm rather than growing out in a radial fashion, which could be indicating that it was searching for nutrients or something that it possibly needed for growth, which would warrant for further investigation. We thought this was kind of interesting. And our observations also kind of coincide with those in the field in Wisconsin, that dollar spot is worse on fairways than it is on sand-based putting greens, since the data shows that it was a little less on those sand-based treatments rather than the native silt loam treatments with debris. I would like to thank everybody in my lab that helped me out with this project, the TDL manager Paul Koch, Aaron Hogan and John Steyer for supplying us with things we needed to do the experiment, our funding source, USDA Hatch, and the Wisconsin Golf Course Superintendents Association. At this time, I'd like to thank you and entertain any questions you might have.
Questions?
Yes.
You were talking about host specificity for these isolates, but I mean, really, when you looked at the growth comparing the buffalo grass, Bermuda grass isolates for the bent grass, it didn't look to be that different to me. So maybe it was a little bit lower, but you know, I would still say they were pretty effective in infecting creeping bent grass.
Yeah, there. The question dealt with the host specificity that we saw on the creeping bent grass versus a warm season and cool season isolates, and the fact that they seemed very similar on the AUC charts. In fact, they were. I think we only had maybe one or two that seemed to be statistically significant. So if it was, it would just be a very minor effect, but I still think this warrants further investigation, since that would be really interesting if that were occurring on our grass species.
I have a quick question.
Sure.
Did you do any sterilization of the soil and compare sterile versus unsterile?
No, we did not sterilize the soil. We did go with sterile turf grass debris, and part of the using the dissecting scope was to see if we had any origination of contaminant fungi colonies, and this didn't really seem to be a problem. Our sand that we used was Wolpaca sand that was never used on a golf course, and the native silt loam that we used was taken out of a cornfield and sun-dried, so that might have had a little bit of a sterilization effect, but we didn't actually autoclave our soils.
Okay, any other questions? Let's thank our speaker.